There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Another couple hours of live local talk and a week out from Veterans Day. So let me take a second here as we get started with this show and talk about next week. So next week, it is we've talked about Veterans Month here at FM Talk 106.5. More of those veteran interviews coming up next week and all through the month on this show as we feature local veterans. But a week from today, so Dan and Dalton, Mobile Mornings, is going to be live at, like we've done, except for last year, we've done for years and years, live at the Veterans Day Parade as they get ready there at the Civic Center, right? So we'll be out there doing the show with food and coffee and all that for our veterans. Your chance to come by and say hello and thank you to those veterans. That's going to be going on during the morning. And then maybe some events coming up during this show later on in that day featuring veterans from right around here as those the parade ends and they have the event at Fort Whiting and the whole nine. And in addition, Fisher House, our show that we run as charities go, national charities, it's one of the three that we really focus on. And Fisher House does what Ronald McDonald House does for families that have children at facilities, just like Children's and Women's Hospital here in Mobile. They give them a home, a place to stay away, you know, from wherever they had to travel from to be there close to their children. Fisher House does the same thing for the families of our veterans. We'll be featuring them this month as well. So that's all coming up in a week from today. Dan and Dalton in the morning show live there at the start of the Veterans Day Parade on the 11th. All right, coming up on the show today, a couple of things on the list, and then my buddy Cameron Smith is going to join us here from AL.com in just a second. I wonder... So it was during the show yesterday that I was getting text of that shooting that went down at Dauphin and 65. And we're going to talk about that some more in addition to some other gunplay that went on during the day yesterday and earlier this week. I just want to try to, connect those or ask some questions about that violence. I mean, we have a obvious uptick in issue in violence. We have a flurry of that right now. Is there some connection? We'll talk about that as well coming up on today's show. And now let's make way for our buddy Cameron Smith, AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. And he joins us to talk about a whole bunch now. Cameron, you're going to should people go ahead and get the text line open and get ready with angry text? Or what are we going to do today?
Sean, everyone should prepare to bring the pain.
But, your headline, one of the stories people can check out over at AL.com, Republicans trounce Democrats, peddling fears of Trump and white supremacy. It was like the worst job of that by the Democrats in Virginia, and I would add maybe some elements of the Lincoln Project as well. They went for that move, but I think most people could see through that. Obviously, they did in Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of hard to argue that, like, well, you know, Virginia, the blue state that it is, yeah, they're all racist. That's really what happened here. I mean, come on. That is so tired, and people are seeing right through it because the idea that, well, let me back up a little bit.
Okay.
First, let's talk about the Trump thing. The Democrats, the governor tried to act like Trump was there holding Glenn Youngkin's hand and guiding him through Virginia. That was false. Youngkin basically ran his own campaign. He was not anti-Trump. He was not pro-Trump. He just sort of said, yay, and moved along. And it made the governor of Virginia look stupid trying to say, no, you see, he's a Trump clone. He's Trump. He loves Trump. Because that's what worked for Biden, so that's what they ran. And it is a very, very important case for particularly swing state and swing district Republicans to learn from, because Youngkin picked up 17%. The CNN exit poll said he picked up 17% of the voters who don't like Trump. That's a big deal, and that made the difference in the election. And so in those competitive races, Republicans need to learn from this. Don't alienate the base. Don't wrap yourself in Trump. That's takeaway one.
Well, okay. So, and I see it from back home here in Alabama. Maybe you can help me with what goes on in Virginia. I saw it basically that 17% and others were people that said, whatever's going on in national politics, I want to have a say-so in my child's school. Am I seeing it too simplistically?
You're absolutely right. I mean, the education issue Democrats missed because they played this weird shell game with critical race theory. This was the flashpoint, right? What happened, to roll a little further back, is, well, COVID happened. Parents had to pay attention to the curriculum and teaching methods that were going on because their kids weren't going to school. They were at home, right? So parents were having to kind of take a closer look. They didn't like everything they saw, and frankly, they had some questions. Democrats could have answered those in good faith and say, yeah, we're talking about race. We're talking about it in this manner, in these subjects, and these are difficult conversations, but here's what we're doing. Instead, they said, critical race theory is not a thing. We're not teaching this in the schools. It's not even a thing. And they play this weird shell game. And then they came out and said, well, we really don't want parents to have the ability to control their kids' education in the public schools. And that was just a bridge too far. And Republicans capitalized on that. And I don't think Democrats have learned the lesson.
Yeah, I don't, you know, there, you can say that there's definitely partisanship in education. You talk about teachers' unions and all those things. But this gets to a, to be cliched, a granular level that's below that, right? That's more of the essence, to continue with the cliches. It's kitchen table. Even if somebody believes in a progressive agenda or this, that, and the other, when they're told that they don't have a say-so in their children's education, that's not even by politics or party. That's telling them that they're not in charge of their children. And I think there's plenty of Democrats out there who said, say what? You said what?
Yeah, and I think that's a game changer to say, okay, we can disagree on what to teach and how to teach it, but at the end of the day, these are my kids. Every parent believes that. And the idea that Democrats would even come close to saying, well, actually, the state is in charge of what we teach your kids. We don't really want you to be in the driver's seat. That's a loser, right? I mean, there may be some people that think that's a great idea, but most Americans are like, these are my kids. I'm responsible for them. And what they learn, yeah, it really does matter to me. And so even if it's through a school board or through, you know, a state official, I'm going to have a say. And when the governor came out and, you know, stuck his foot in his mouth, that was really a game changer in that race. Because when you say, I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach, he had to try to explain that away and be like, I didn't really mean the thing I said. And Republicans around the country should learn from that and say, hey, what do you think about this statement, Democrat? You know, this governor of Virginia said this. Are you in league with him, or do you think parents should have control? And that's hard for a lot of Democrats right now who are saying, well, you know what? This is white supremacy. These parents who are raising concerns, they're really in league with racists. Yeah. And it's just a loser for them, because there are plenty of parents that are acknowledging the need to talk about race and saying, hey, this is important. We want to get our history right, and we want to address these issues of race. But how we do that and the teaching methods and the curriculum, well, that's something we're going to have input into. And we're not... It's not either you buy the progressive liberal narrative or you're a racist, and that's what Democrats want to run with.
Okay, I want to come back out to a broader level. Although I wonder, with the crash team that was brought in to try to save McAuliffe in Virginia, how much of that stink got on them? You write here, Virginia's elections are nothing short of a seismic upset for Democrats after they ran a parade of high-profile partisan figures to salvage Governor Terry McAuliffe's campaign. Talk about that.
I mean, Barack Obama, Kamala Harris, Stacey Abrams, Jill Biden, Joe Biden. I mean, this is a Rolodex of the who's who of Democrat elite. Like, You want these people to show up. They drive attendance at rallies and events because Democrats turn out for these folks. And it did not work. This and the mistake here is saying, well, Virginia is kind of a purple state. No, it's not. Joe Biden won it by 10 points. I mean, this is a blue state that has now a Republican governor, the first woman of color to be the lieutenant governor, and the first attorney general elect who is Latino. And so Democrats, not only did they say, well, be afraid of Trump, but also be afraid of white supremacy. Well, Republicans, something's off here if electing those folks is evidence of white supremacy. Those are some really, really bad white supremacists.
Well, okay. So I would argue that it, in this case, because it's being pushed the other way, then yes, let's bring it up. I tire of the, hey, we've got a, it's like when the Biden administration came together and they would announce somebody by their race or whether they were transgender or whatever it was, and then a couple paragraphs down tell you why they're a good person for that position. So I want to be careful on the Republican side of doing it, but it's factual. I mean, you look at the people that were coming in here. If you want to take what they look like as a reason to have voted or not voted for them, yeah, you laid it out. What happened in Virginia is telling. I don't know how they are white supremacists that aren't white.
Yeah, and I mean, so I agree. The idea of being like, well, because of this person's race, well, they are eminently qualified for the position. Well, that's silly, right?
Right.
But the point is, Democrats have long said, well, hey, look at these historic advances for non-whites. And to which Republicans say, yeah, look, this is totally historic. This is an advance for non-whites. And it's radio silence from Democrats. Because their argument is not about racial equality. It is not about working through really important cultural issues and bringing folks together. It is, we are the allies of non-whites, and Republicans are at best closet racists. And so this in Virginia doesn't fit the narrative, right? You have real success from non-white candidates who don't support the Democrats' agenda in silence. From all these groups that are like, we want to see advances for people of color.
Yeah, why wouldn't you celebrate that? Why would you not? I mean, why would you not be out celebrating that? We know why, but I mean, it's a fair question to ask.
But that's the point. And that's where people should really push back and say, if this is about advances for people of color, which is critically important, which yes. We should applaud, yep. It applies in the Republican context as much as the Democratic one. But all these groups that are saying, well, we are about advancing these, you know, priorities for these people. It's if you have our political beliefs,
there you go.
Then you count. If you don't, then it doesn't matter your skin color. We're not gonna encourage you and lift you up. And that's a shame.
Well said. All right, coming right back. More with Cameron Smith. He's with AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. More to talk about at a national level, but also lots to talk about what's happening in our legislature right now.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 12:23, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have y'all along. Remember, download that app, too. It's waiting for you. For free, just look for FM TALK 1065. No point between the 6 and 5. Do that if you're an iPhone user at the App Store. You're an Android user, go to a Google Play. Check out the app. You're going to love it. A continued conversation with my buddy, Cameron Smith, AL.com, and the Triptych Foundation. All right, before we get back into this, you make the call. Here we go. Who is more a person of color? Okay, we're going to go to the national Democrat idea. Who's more of a person of color? Is it President Joe Biden or Senator Tim Scott?
Well, I mean, President Joe Biden does glow in the dark, so I'm not sure where that, you know, falls on the spectrum. But, I mean, this is exactly what we're talking about.
I mean, who is? I mean, answer that question, y'all. I mean, because I know the National Democrat Party would say President Biden is.
Yeah, because what it's become is that partisan politics is more determinative of race than actual race. And that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I mean, people of all different races and ethnicities have all different perspectives. And so what we're seeing right now is this garbage notion that there's one political party that you need to vote for if you're non-white, and the other one, well, they're really, and I don't, this dog whistle stuff, they're dog whistling to the white people. Well, I get the partisan narrative from Democrats. I know why they're doing it, but that is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, imagine if I walk out and said, well, hey, because you're white, Sean, you need to vote Republican. People would laugh me out of the room. They'd be like, are you kidding me? That is absurd. But man, we changed that to different races. And the assumption by Democrats that the non-whites need to vote for them, that's ridiculous. That is silly. And we need to push back on that because, again, you just saw in Virginia a lieutenant governor and an attorney general who made historic strides in those offices based on there not being a Latino in the attorney general's office or a woman of color in the lieutenant governor's office. And that's a big deal. And we should have everybody saying, hey, this is important. We are making progress that these opportunities exist for people who aren't white. And I'm all about cheering that on. But where are all these groups that talk about that stuff when it's a Republican that does it? And, yeah, and that to me says this isn't about race. It's about politics. And we need to stop confusing the two.
Now, well said. I will say this. The part about race, I think, is important. I just want the best qualified people there. I love it when it is a diverse group of people that are qualified, but I look at qualifications first. But I will say the second part is good, I think. You have people that look all kind of different ways in different positions. Maybe that opens the door for people, you know, that are younger, the kids or whatever, go, you know, I could do that. I can do that. That's a job that somebody looks like me can do. You know what I'm saying?
That's a
positive.
Deal.
That's a big positive.
Huge deal. And I mean, that's why I look at this stuff. I mean, I don't say, well, historic this or that. I see there's a kid somewhere that lives in Virginia that says, hey, you know what? Somebody that looks like me is in that position of power.
Yep.
And that's a big deal. And I mean, I think a lot of times as white people, we don't think about that because a lot of our politicians and civic leaders and folks have been white. So we're like, yeah, of course I can do that. Somebody that looks like me has already done that.
Yep.
So creating that same opportunity for other people with different skin color, that is awesome. That is amazing. And we need to be like, yes, you can do this. You can absolutely be in these roles. And hey, here's the crazy thing about it. You can be conservative too.
Yep.
And I mean, that to me is what's a big deal. But man, that does not fit the Democratic media narrative. And so, ooh, man, we can't talk about that.
We didn't get the memo, so we are talking about it. We got like a couple minutes left here. I do want to talk about what's going on in Montgomery right now in special session. What do you think of the SB9, and which is Senator Elliott's bill for the religious exemption? I know Senator Orr has a bill up as well.
Well, I I've talked to Senator Elliott about that. I mean, it's a little bit of a head scratcher for me. The big question I have is, okay, so it's like it's a religious exemption that basically is a blanket exemption. And if Joe Biden is totally fine with that in terms of what he's pushing and he's not going to challenge that at all, then hey, that's a great idea. But the other aspect of it that makes me a little uncomfortable is, at last I checked, it was a state bureaucrat that was deciding whether the exemption was legitimate or not. And I don't think that's a good idea either. I've been pretty consistent about this stuff. Let businesses, private businesses, make the decisions for their workers and workplaces and let the free market operate. That's how it should be. And I understand that may not be popular with some folks, but hey, that's what principle looks like.
You know, and people are saying, though, this is not just a question of you got to wear a uniform to work, right? This is something of putting something into your body. I wonder, I mean, how far do we go? Because people will say, and it's been, I think they've won in court, that if you say something on social media or something outrageous, even though it's not on company time, people have lost their jobs for that, right? That their thoughts.
Yeah, and yeah, there's a lot of conditions that employers can put on employees. And the way I look at it is that the employer is not tackling you and jabbing you and putting medicine into your body, saying, hey, if you want to work here and come into the workplace that I created, I expect you to do this. And you have a choice whether you want to comply with that or not. And it's competing choices. It's, I have a choice as an employer, what I want to do, and you have a choice what you want to do. It is illegal for an employer to tackle you and vaccinate you.
Yeah, but
they
can
give you a choice.
Okay, I'm running out of time here, hey, can you hold over the break? Because there's no...
Sure.
Okay, because all I want to set up is that if you're at a place where you can't replace that job, the job that belongs to the business, you can't replace it that easily, you're kind of over a barrel, aren't you kind of figuratively tackled by that employer? But we'll let you talk about this when we come back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
The headline, the super on TV comes up, Paul and Fauci clash again. Yeah, they're talking about Senator Paul, Dr. Fauci. Hey, maybe it's a little bit like Harlem Globetrotters and Washington Generals, right? They just show up and play the same game every time, and one always wins and one always loses. Although, hey, you may, by your political stripes, you may think one always wins. It might be different than the one I think always wins. But, I kind of think Rand Paul in those debates back and forth is the Harlem Globetrotters. That's my take on it. All right. Continue our conversation. Cameron Smith, AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. And but talk about the story y'all can catch over at AL. Or opinion piece you can catch at AL.com. It is Republicans trounce Democrats peddling fears of Trump and white supremacy, which is pithy. I like it. But we kind of got in this discussion here about what was going on at a federal level. And then we started talking about a state level as well with businesses back here. And I don't. Do you think in a situation where, and I'm trying to open my mind here on this because I do have a strong libertarian bent. Nobody's going to like say, "Oh, I got you." You're yes, I am. Trying to thread the needle here to somebody who's done nothing wrong, has worked hard at their job, and they could lose the job because they don't want to get the vaccine for a myriad of reasons. And the idea of a business that wants to keep federal contracts, or for some reason, if they think that having vaccines is the better choice, whose liberty do I defend?
Well, I think in this situation, when it comes to the individual in an individual capacity, you defend them. When it comes to a business owner and business decision, you defend them.
Can you do both?
I mean, that's the
yes. Can two exist?
Yes, absolutely. Because the individual's liberty, for example, the government saying, well, we're going to force you to get a vaccine. You must be vaccinated. Well, yeah, man. I mean, that's a political choice. And we can go out there and say, no, we are not going to force you to do this as a matter of public health. That's absolutely, hey, that's how we defend individuals' liberty to make those health decisions. Where we're sort of going a bridge too far is when it comes to a business. And I'm not talking like big business. I'm talking small business. I'm talking they'll call it a landscaping company saying, well, you know, I want my workers to be healthy. We're around a lot of different people. I want to protect them. I make the rational choice. Hey, I want my workers to be vaccinated or, you know, they can't work here. I understand some employees not liking that choice. But again, the employer is not saying I will vaccinate you or you must do this. It's, hey, if you want to work here, that's one of my requirements. And yeah, it's a health choice, but you have to pick. And then for Republicans that say, well, that's not a choice. I need the job. So, you know, we've got to ban the employer. Well, what you're saying is you're entitled to a job you did not create. It belongs to you regardless of the preferences of the person or entity that did create it. And I just disagree with that. There are certain exceptions we've made politically. The Civil Rights Act being a big one that says, hey, if you want to discriminate based on race and you're of a certain size or these other protected classes, you can't do that. We're not going to allow that. But do we want to keep extending that to say, well, here's a vaccine? No, this is just like race. This is just like, you know, ethnicity. Your decision whether you want to take a vaccine or not is in the same category. My answer is no. I understand people who say yes, but that is very much taking you down the road to, well, if you can do this, then what else can you do? And I just think that's a slippery slope that conservatives should avoid.
A lot of texts coming in here. Dave in Gulf Shores says to ask you about when he got bullied at work for being vaccinated. Is there some sort of protection for me?
No. I mean, that's my point, is that if folks are saying, oh, man, I can't believe you got... Yeah, okay, if an employer wants to say, no, we don't allow harassment at the workplace and do that as a private decision, they can and should. I think somebody's boss should interfere at that point and say, whoa, we're going to treat people right in this workplace, regardless of their healthcare decisions. The idea that we need government to come in and interfere, whether it's to protect people from, you know, vaccine harassment or protect people from employers who are, you know, wanting them to be vaccinated, I think we need to let the marketplace sort that out. And if it's not an environment where you want to be, this is a great market for labor to find other opportunities because there's a worker shortage right now. Again, markets are more effective than government.
Yeah, the texter says it's November 2021. Laugh out loud. Your boss or folks might say everyone's replaceable, but in the current market, the majority would have a hard time finding replacements, especially quickly for you at the same pay rate that doesn't include extended training periods. Now you multiply that times more than one and it hurts.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. And again, I don't support government mandates in either direction. I think the market should sort this out. Unfortunately, President Biden has said, you know what? I'm going to try to use spending power and the executive branch authority to force this issue on a lot of folks. And I disagree with that decision politically. I mean, I think that's a good reason why Joe Biden doesn't need to be president of the United States anymore the next time he's up for election. But I don't think the answer to Joe Biden is create more government mandates at a different level because you disagree with him politically.
Well, let me try this from a populist perspective, though, and step outside my shoes here. And what do you tell that person that that loses that job because of this here in Alabama? Once again, I do agree with you. It's uncomfortable, but the job to hear, people hear it, but the job belongs to the business. But that loses that job when if we could have just done something like Senator Elliott's SB9, they could just buy some time until there's a judicial branch challenge, right? And this gets shot down. On the judicial side, it keeps them, even though it's not perfect policy, it at least is a lifeline to maybe get them 6 months down the road so they don't get forced in that position.
Sure, and I understand the political pressure to do that. In fact, I've talked to people whose job losses are imminent, and they say, well, hey, I hear you, but like, what about me? And I'm saying, I hear you, and you have more opportunity in this labor market than people have had in a long time, but you are making a choice. You are, and you and I have said on this station, these vaccines are safe. Like the argument here is the vaccines are okay. And I understand people not wanting to take them, but the idea that you make that choice and it is consequence free for you. Well, I don't believe that. I think that private employers have choices they make too. And so the combination of those may not work in your favor. And I've told people that it doesn't mean they have to like it, but to go to government and be like, fix for me is not conservative. That's not how conservatives behave. This is, hey, I just want government to go do a thing I want because I don't want to deal with the consequences of my personal choices. And I just don't support that, and I've been pretty consistent about that.
Yeah, I just want you to wonder why it's not why it's all stick and not carrot either, though, because you look at like the flu, right? So if you're running, I'm running a big factory, we're making widgets, and you know, I look at my charts and I go, man, we lose, I don't know, 46 work days per month in the wintertime for flu. If I could demand everybody get vaccinated, then we wouldn't have those, you know, people being sick and being off like that, where you could turn around and say, okay, well, in today's world, you may incentivize that, right? Say, hey, y'all, if you take the flu shot here, we're going to give you an extra day off so you can choose to do it or not. But, I mean, it does. I mean, flu affects a business's efficiency. If they're looking at it from a business perspective themselves, not trying to to genuflect here to the federal government, what's coming through an executive order?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with an employer creating incentives to say, hey, please do this thing to help our productivity and to help keep you healthy. I mean, a lot of employers do a lot of things like that. And if, frankly, if an employer, and again, this is going to really set people off, but if an employer says, you know what, I see that we've lost a lot of productivity to the flu, you know, as a condition of working here, you need to get a flu vaccine. That's the same thing. I would be consistent with that as well, because it's the private sector. They create the job. They're setting a condition. It's not unreasonable. And the idea that you disagree with it is fine, but you can disagree with your a lot of employer decisions and lose your job. The fact that this one is protected, it doesn't seem to me to be particularly unique.
Buford on the text line asking where it stops. She said, where does it stop? The landscape company tells the employee to go to this church or you can't work here. It's a slippery slope indeed. What's the difference?
Well, I mean, again, these are religion, for example, being a protected class. Employers of certain size can't do some of those things, right? And so the government does make specific carve-outs to this, hey, general rule of an employer can do this. The question is, okay, now do we want to add into, basically create a new liberty that says, if you disagree with workplace health and safety, which is what this boils down to, you don't have to like it or like it characterizes that, but that's what this is. If you disagree, you don't have to comply, because that's a protected class now. I just don't see that actually happening, because it's not a good idea.
I tell you what's weird. If you look at this, the businesses have become a proxy for not even the federal government, for President Biden and OSHA. I mean, they've become this proxy. They have to fight the battle versus the battle being taken to this order.
Yeah, and so this is my big problem, is the issue is Joe Biden. Okay, and put the point where it is. The issue is Joe Biden. Joe Biden has said, hey, we're seeing better numbers. Things are moving in a positive direction, yet I'm pushing this as a matter of public health. I'm disregarding the trajectory and saying, you know what? Instead of trying to force this issue and create all kinds of chaos, I'm going to do it anyway. He's wrong. He should not be doing this right now, and that's causing the issue. So I understand a politician saying, I'm going to fight Joe Biden on this. But to basically play political football with businesses of different sizes,
don't get me started on that. I think that's the Achilles heel. I really do. If it's about public safety, when you do something as arbitrary and capricious as breaking it at not by sector of work but by number of employees, to me that's like, I don't have, you know, you're the lawyer around here. I'm just descended from one. That would be what I'd be pushing. How can you separate by number of employees? It's not even the sector. It's just by how many people you have working.
And it's weird. And I've written about this and pointed out that these rules, this is political, right? If there is a pressing imminent need and these people in this industry must, like, for example, around hospitals and healthcare workers, like, people would be amenable to say, well, this is a little bit of a different situation because of your exposure risk and things like that. Biden's rules are just all over the place and in weird ways. And I think that's part of the issue that people have with what's going on, is this does seem so arbitrary. It doesn't seem to be connecting with reality right now. And as we go further and further away, more and more people are vaccinated. We're moving in a better direction. That's great. That's what we should be doing. And yet Biden's forcing this issue, and it's causing conservatives, instead of saying, no, we're not going to behave like him, they're behaving exactly like Joe Biden. They're just doing it on the state level.
All right. People want to engage in this conversation further with you. Where do they go?
Go to @DCameronSmith on Twitter, al.com/opinion. You can find me on Facebook at David Cameron Smith. Just look for the very handsome one. That's me. And, you know, please be a part of the conversation, because when you're not part of the conversation, you're just a voyeur in some stuff that's pretty important for our society.
All said. All right, brother. Look forward to talking to you next week.
Thanks, Sean.
Coming right back. More Midday Mobile right here on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, a programming note tomorrow, this hour, noon hour tomorrow, Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson joins us. A lot to talk about with the 100-day plan, and also we'll talk about the violence in the city, which we, after I get through these texts, if we have some time, we may add to the mix here. Holy cow. Could read some of the text. Could be here for 2 hours. All right. Wow. They're coming in very quickly here. BA says, I don't want to speak for all landscapers, but we do our best to avoid working around other people. Yeah. Phil says, as my old boss used to say, that's why I have law firms with 12 names on retainer to file paperwork, to kick the can, and buy me plenty of time to keep on going. The local rapper, when are you dropping your new album? Send me something. Local rapper said, sounds like someone needs to teach Dave how to handle a bully. I guess you tell people you got vaccinated and they're picking on you for, I mean, that's, why do people care? The flip side of that, let me just, side note, let's pull off on the shoulder of the road here for a second. As much as it frustrates me, the vaccine Gestapo out there, the flip side of it too drives me nuts. Yeah, there's not been tons of stories, but there have been stories from around the country where somebody wearing a mask is getting harassed by other people because they're wearing a mask, or somebody like Dave said, they get vaccinated and they get harassed. What do you care? Like, I guess I just don't worry. I don't have enough time in my day to worry what other people do as long as it doesn't influence me. It's like, we're going to have a story coming up someday, I'm sure, that somebody overdosed on vaccines. They got so many vaccines. They were strung out on vaccines. They were under the overpass doing whatever they had to do to get money for vaccine. Whatever. Fine. They made their choices. It's like, as much as the liberals that are the vaccine Gestapo and mask Gestapo, the flip side of it should be true, and it bothers me too. Who cares if somebody else gets vaccinated and wears a mask and you don't do it yourself? Fine. Okay. Just live your life. Anderson says, so maybe if the employer is willing to take medical responsibility for any adverse effects from pressuring an employee to take the vaccination, that might be a partial solution. Don't you know that that's been discussed out there? What would that mean for lawsuits? So Jason says it's not a mandate from private business. It's a mandate from the federal government. Yeah, Jason, that's what I'm saying. And you end up having the private business ends up having to fight the battle that really is won from the federal government. So Don says, this is just my opinion. I think a lot of conspiracy theories about the vaccine were created by the Democrat Party, and mandates follow accordingly because the Democratic Party want to know who their constituents are in the voting population, or are trying to destroy the conservative movement in this country by government overreach. Dale says, what if my 101 employees I employ are required to not be vaccinated, or maybe I only hire smokers? Is that kosher? the reality of it is, we've said it since day one. You have a business that has 115 employees, then 15 go 1099, right? I mean, this is the frustrating thing. There's an idealistic argument that we make here and we talk about, and it fills up our text line and our inboxes and all that stuff. But the pragmatic argument is there's a way to hustle around all this stuff. But it's so sad as a government for the people, by the people, keeps coming out with stuff that the people have to figure out a way to get around. So Jay says religion mandating membership is actually a thing. Look at what the Church of Scientology does. Laugh out loud, not a member. You're fired. So Matt says, so this guy says, that's Cameron probably, says religion is a protected class, but my religious exemption to the vaccine isn't going to save my job. So now religion isn't a protected class. You know, I don't know. And I think I've talked about this in the past, that so on my mom's side of the family, we descend from conscientious objectors. I am proud of a family member of mine from World War II that went as a medic and was in the European theater. I used to say he's got more stones than I would have had to be there without a rifle in his hand. But they had religious exemption to carrying a gun, not to service. Dr. Liu says flu vaccine is not the same as COVID vaccine. There is a safety issue with the experimental COVID vaccine, as well as a religious question associated with fetal parts used in its production. Right. That's the religious exemption, I think. They go back and it's – I did dig into that, Dr. Liu. I think it's – if I understand this correctly, it's from duplicated stem cells that came from maybe the 80s on that. But you're correct in as part of it. All right, got a lot more text here we'll try to get to in the next hour. Plus, Brian Dawson from the 1819 News joins me coming up in just a couple minutes. And we'll grab some calls. And, yeah, we'll talk about gunplay in Mobile as well.